Hey, and welcome to the Humanity Church Podcast. So excited that you're here. We hope that you enjoy this week's talk and it really connects to your life in a meaningful way. If you're live in the Pomona area, we would love to have you at one of our gatherings at 10 a.m. or at one of our Humanity groups that meet all throughout the week, all over the city. If you want more information about our community, you can go to www.humanitychurch.com or download our app on your phone on Apple or Android. If you like what you're hearing here and want to continue to support the ongoing work at Humanity, you can text the word Humanity Church, one word, to 77977 and give back financially in just about 10 seconds. Hey, and here's this week's talk that was given live at our Sunday gathering at Humanity Church. Father, we thank you for your presence here. We thank you as we lift our voices to you in song together that you meet us and that we become aware of you, God. And we thank you that we have been experiencing and continue to experience you here on Sundays in our homes during the week at community groups, God. And we are so grateful for your work in us and through us. I don't always recognize it, God, but we know that your presence is sustaining us and moving us and flowing through us. And would you just allow us to become more aware of that? We're so grateful and we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. So like I said, we've been talking about what it looks like to connect to the presence of God. And we talked early on about how the presence sets us apart, how it makes us this thing called holy, which literally means uniquely different from every other person on the face of the planet because we've connected to his presence. We talked about how it connects us in community, how it unites us and binds us, how it then sets us up on a mission, how it brings dead things to life, how it causes us to worship. And last week we talked about how it redeems our past, how it takes the things that have been done to us, the things that we've done, and it moves them towards a space of beauty. And my hope as a pastor in this conversation, in this series that we've been engaged in, is that you would actually seek God's presence in every arena that you live in every space, in your parenting, in your finances, in your spiritual journey, in your career, that God's presence would be just the greatest resource that you have in your life, that it would be something that you would turn to first, before anything else, to move us forward. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but our world feels like it is spiraling out of control. Right? I mean, you turn on any news source, you turn on social media, you turn on any type of conversation that's going on, and it literally feels like our world is about to explode or implode, one or the other, right? And it's always been like that. I know every generation says, this is it, right? This is the end, and end times are here because everything's so crazy. But it feels like everything's spiraling out of control. And there are a lot of reactions and possible solutions to all of the spiral, no matter what side you're on. There's all kinds of political conversations around how to solve things. There's all kinds of religious strategies to solve things. There are all kinds of strategies to solve the situation and the spiral that's out of control. And to be honest, there's actually quite a bit of pressure on myself to pick a side and then to preach the solution from whatever that looks like. And it usually has to do with voting on some type of bill or speaking out against some type of political regime or following some type of religious dogma that we need to step into. But here's the thing, is that you cannot actually legislate morality in any way, shape, or form. And religious dogma will not actually move us towards a healthier self. Just like, hey, practice these certain things and you'll find yourself healthy. And strategies can only go so far. They only work in certain situations and certain connections. And so the thing is that I don't know when it comes to politics and religion and strategy, how to steer you towards wholeness in the middle of that. But what I am convinced of is that when people connect to the presence of God, things get healthier. And that when people connect to the presence of God, the human condition is quieted and beauty is released in the middle of that. So what I do know is that if we can get one another into a space where we are connected to the presence of God, and then we move out into our communities and become that presence for other people, things start to shift, and things start to change, and things start to transform. And I know people don't like that conversation because it requires a lot of faith, and it requires a lot of release of control. It would be much easier to legislate things. It would be much, much easier to put a policy in place and say, this will fix everything. But the fact of the matter is what humanity is looking for is a spiritual solution to a physical problem. And it will not actually ever be solved until we recognize that it is spiritual And that until we connect to a God who is longing to redeem hearts and to heal and to put things back into place where beauty can be released, we will be stuck in the middle of this. This is actually one of the reasons why being connected to a humanity group is so critical during the week. Because here's the thing, is that every living being has an ecosystem that it thrives in. Growing up, I had a little bit of like ADD with a lot of different things. And so I had lots of hobbies that were like serial hobbies. But a lot of things, not like serial, but multiple. But that also equated to animals. And so God bless my parents. I hope karma is not coming for me. But I would bring home a different pet probably about every month. And God bless the Chino swap meet where you could buy ducks and chickens and lizards and snakes and toucans and monkeys for cheap, right? And I would come home with a new animal every month. And the expensive thing actually wasn't the animal. The expensive thing was creating the ecosystem that animal could thrive in, right? Whether it was a parrot and it needed like the proper nutrition, or whether it was the iguana that needed the right heat and humidity, or whether it was the duck that literally lived in my bedroom for a series of weeks. I mean, every living being needs an ecosystem to thrive in, or else it will die eventually. The ecosystem that the human spirit thrives in is called the church. That's what the human spirit actually longs for, a connection between people and God where we actually move towards a space of wholeness. And so your soul actually needs a space where you can connect to the presence of God with other people. And that's what humanity groups are really all about, the church coming together where you can experience the presence of Jesus. And I have so much faith in those environments. I know there's a lot of great solutions out there, and they're really amazing. I recommend all kinds of things, everything from therapy to yoga to meditation to essential oils. Try them all, right? But what I will tell you is this, that when you connect to a community that is connected to the presence of God, it will do anything beyond what you could ask or imagine. And because God can move in that ecosystem, because that's what we were designed for. See, even the scriptures were written in a communal context. See, this is why when we try to do our faith on our own, it's a really popular idea these days. Like, I'm just going to do my thing. I'm going to live stream something at home, sit there, eat my, like, cereal, and then I'm going to, like, do my thing. But the entire context of the scriptures were actually written in community. When you look at books like Corinthians, it was written to the Corinthian community. And so when you read even the word you in the scriptures, it is not a personal to you. It is more like a you guys, right? Or a y'all in Texas, as they call it. We're correcting improper English, but that will get there. And so it is connected to the conversation of community. And human beings have this unique ability to come together and create so much beauty in the world. They have the ability to come together and create all types of cities and communities and environments where human beings can thrive and beauty is released. But human beings also have this unique ability to come together and create destruction in the world. That when we come together, we both have the unique ability to create beauty or to create chaos everywhere we go. And what the scriptures and the presence of God calls us into is a space where we come together so that beauty is what is released as a result of our lives and connecting to his presence. And so in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, starting in verse 13, this is what Paul says to us. If you have a copy of the scriptures, you can open there with me. If you have the app, you can open that. We just released a new update on the app, so there's all kinds of new fun stuff on there. And if you need a Bible, you can raise your hands. We would love to give you a Bible. It's one of our favorite things to do here at Humanity. So you can read along, have it, take it home, feed it, give it an ecosystem. So 2 Corinthians 5, 13. Paul says this, if we are out of our minds, as some say, it is for God. Feels like you're out of your mind sometime, right? When you're connecting to the presence of God. Let's just be honest, it's a little weird to be in a room and say God's presence is here and he's going to heal someone. That's not lost on me. For those of you who are here and you're like, that's weird, right? So he says, if we are out of our minds, as some say, and some do say, it is for God. If we are in our right mind, it's for you. For Christ's love compels us because we are convinced that one died for all and therefore all died. And he died for all, and those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and who was raised again. So from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we were once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation.
The old has come, the old is gone, the new is here. And this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed us to the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. And we implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. See, just like we talked about last week, Christians love the word free. We love the word freedom. We're like, yeah, you, the Son that's free is free indeed. Love it. Beautiful. We also like the word new. That's another buzzword, right? All things made new. It's a beautiful word, and we really love that. But last week, we talked about how God redeems our past and sets us free, and he gives us freedom even in the midst of all of the things that have happened, all of the things that we have done. But Paul here now starts talking about how God reconciles us to him and what that looks like in the context of his presence. See, reconciliation is a term that's often used in banking. It is literally the action of making one account equal to the other and making sure that they are equally connected to one another. If you have a checkbook, theoretically, you should be reconciling that sucker every month, right? Now, I know we don't work with checkbooks often in our culture today, but there was a time when you wrote checks out to people and you would match what amount says in the bank in your checkbook based on what's actually taking place in the bank. Thanks to modern technology, we don't necessarily have to do that. But as a community, every month we reconcile our books. At the end of the month, we take a look at what our QuickBooks says that we have in the bank and what's actually in the bank. And these theoretically should match. And most months, thank goodness, they do actually match. If they don't match, you get to go through the wonderful process of reconciling. Now, I remember the first few months that we were a community. This was 9 years ago, and we were just on our own, and I took like a basic accounting class and was ready to go with all of this, set up my chart of accounts, and I remember about 18 months into this crazy experiment called humanity that I got stuck in the book somewhere, and so I called up my accountant friend, and I said, hey, there's something like off. I don't really get it. The numbers aren't matching, and they said, when was the last time you reconciled? And I said, what's reconciling? And they said, please tell me that you've been reconciling the books. I said, I don't even know what that means. So they said, well, you need to go back through the last 18 months since you started as a community and reconcile your books, checking every single transaction against what the bank says and make sure that they match. And I printed off the list, and lo and behold, there was about 3,500 transactions that we had to go through over a year and a half period. And so I sat down with my wife and some other people, and we started going through the books and making sure everything was reconciled. And we got to the end, and they were off by 31 cents. 31 cents. Now, I thought, after 18 months, that is amazing. I had the same thought. I thought, I will personally go to my bank account, pull out 31 cents, and deposit it to make things even. So I called my accounting friend, and I said, hey, it's only off by 31 cents. And he said, no, you got to find it. You got to find the 31 cents. And he said, I'm not going to let you off the hook because you are going to develop a financially integrous community here that doesn't just go to the bank account and get 31 cents and call it reconciled. We're not going to start that type of disintegrity early in this community. You're going to find the 31 cents. And let me tell you, it took me probably about 20 hours of finding all kinds of data, and it finally ended up that it was a 31-cent PayPal fee that went got transferred into our account, and about 20 hours later, I found it, and we were reconciled. But the books were now even in the middle of this. Now, this is what happens when we reconcile books financially at a physical level. Here's the thing, is that this is what God did with us spiritually, is that he said that because of our sin, because of our brokenness, that we were at a deficit to God. That if we were to connect to him, it would be completely impossible because we were lacking what we needed. So God says, I will make up the difference. And how I will make up the difference is that I will give my son for you. He will come and he will die for you, and he will allow you to be reconciled to him, not like short of 31 cents, all the way reconciled, right? Completely connected so that you could be reconciled to him. So we are reconciled when we connect to Jesus and the books are closed. The books are closed. It's like, hey, now you are reconciled and we are fair and square in the middle of this. But then Paul goes on from that conversation. And that's oftentimes where we stop in the conversation around Jesus. It's like, we're reconciled, awesome, wait for heaven, go live a good life. But Paul actually does not emphasize the part about us being reconciled to God. He says this, he goes on to say, now you have been given the ministry of reconciliation. Now this is a whole other ballgame in the middle of this, right? I don't like using the term ministry because it has a certain connotation to me oftentimes connected to it. It feels formal and feels churchy. But yeah, religious. And the thing is this, is that the word ministry has the same root word as administer. That when you administer a drug or a medication, you are helping someone move towards a space of wholeness. And here's the thing, is that God has called us to administer reconciliation to the world around us. He has called us to be those who are dealers in reconciliation everywhere that we go. And that from God, through us, the world might be reconciled to God. So in other words, we are given the presence of God in us so that we might then go and become reconcilers of the world around us. See, we become carriers of the presence of God to everyone around us for the sake of reconciliation. This, by the way, is why you will never be able to create the beauty that your soul longs to create in the world around you until you have actually connected to Jesus. Because before that, your soul will always be at a deficit. You will constantly be striving and working from a place of lack rather than from a place of abundance. Your spiritual account will always be in the negative. See, because here's what I do know about you, same thing that I know about myself, is that I have a whole past of things that I have done that have created a space of brokenness in my own life. There's a whole bunch of things from my past that have been done to me that have created a space of brokenness. There's a whole bunch of things that I didn't do and that others didn't do that have created a space of brokenness in me. And I know that's true of me. I also know that it's true of you because it's true of humanity. See, and when we live from that space, we are constantly trying to reconcile the difference ourselves. Hey, if I do it good enough, then people will like me, and then I'll be able to get there. If I just find enough happiness or joy, then I'll get there. If I'm a good enough parent, then maybe I'll make up for it. If I'm a good enough worker, then maybe I'll make up for it. If I have enough religion, maybe I'll make up for it. But we will spend our entire life struggling to get to the place where we are reconciled, when this whole time, God is just saying, you are reconciled if you will just connect to me. It's done. All that energy, all that work is not necessary. And see, here's the thing. If we are not reconciled first, if our accounts are not filled, our inclination then is not to give back to the world, because we will always have a deficit. And so if I have a deficit, my inclination will be to take as much as I can to make up the difference. I wasn't given love, so now I need to take love from other people. I missed out on protection, so now I need others to protect me. I missed out on someone giving to me, so now I need to take resources from other people. And so our natural inclination when we are not reconciled in life, not only with God, but with other people, will be a constant need to take, to make up the difference that we don't have. And when God reconciles our spirit, our accounts are full and we are now free to give. We are now free to become those who generate beauty and hope and goodness and joy in the world around us. We no longer have to make up for anything. And we then become agents of those who reconcile others so that they can be free to once again give to the world around us. See, generosity is like a knee-jerk reaction when your life is reconciled. Because it is like, oh, there's nothing to make up for. There's nothing to fill. There's no void here. I can now give of myself because there is more than enough that has been given to me in the middle of this. And here's the thing. Is that Jesus says, you are now going to go reconcile the world. And he said, you are going to do this as if you're basically speaking on my behalf, which is kind of crazy, right? I mean, if you imagine this, God was like, hey, of all the people that are gonna represent me and speak on my behalf, it's you. Now I look at my life and I'm like, yikes, right? There's not much about my life that just screams God 24/7, right? In fact, my wife will tell you otherwise in the middle of that. But he actually says, you are called to represent me. Have you ever had someone misrepresent you? It's a frustrating experience, isn't it? I remember when we first moved to downtown Pomona, I was so nervous to get connected to the arts community here because there were some like artistic heroes that lived here in the arts community, and we're part of what's called the Pomona Arts Colony Association. And I remember getting called into my very first meeting, and I was so nervous. I called my friend Josh, and I was like, hey, can you like meet me out front? I felt like I was in junior high again. Can you like walk me in, you know? Can I sit by you? And I remember getting there and thinking, man, I just want to be invisible. I just want to watch all these giants as they're creating and planning for the future. Now, before this, there had been a group of believers who had been coming out to Art Walk on Saturday nights, the second Saturday of every month, and they had been dressing up as Jesus and carrying around a cross and screaming at people with a bullhorn. Now, I'm not going to make any I'm going to make judgments about that because it wasn't just that they were presenting gospel. They were really belligerent about it, and they were in people's faces, and they were angry and proclaiming hell rather than life, and it was a mess. So I remember getting into this Pomona Arts Colony Association and thinking, I just want to be invisible here in the corner and observe and see all the greatness that takes place. And one of the first things they said is, hey, could you introduce yourself? And I said, hi, I'm Nathan. I'm with we were Mosaic at the time. I'm with the Mosaic Gallery. I'm so excited to be here. However we can serve you. And they said, hey, great, glad that you're here. Could you tell your people to stop dressing up like Jesus and carrying their cross around? And I was mortified. And I just said, that is not us. That is not us. So I will have they're like our weird cousin that comes to Thanksgiving, but I will have a conversation with them about all that, and we will get it cleared up, but I just want to make sure that that is not us, right? Because we had been misrepresented in that moment, and I was so frustrated with the whole situation. See, this is the beautiful thing, is that God says, your reputation is now my reputation. And my reputation is now intimately linked to yours. And so if you want to actually represent me, you get to represent me in everything that you do. And here's what I do know, is that God spent a lot of time loving other people. That Jesus spent a lot of time loving other people. And how you relate to the messiness of relationships represents who God is in your life. And it also represents who God is to other people. And here's what I do know, is that if you are going to be connected to people, and if you are going to be connected to God, things will get messy. They absolutely will get messy. Which is why I think of all of the things that God would call us to administer to the world, he would call us to administer reconciliation, bringing accounts back together, not only between God, but between one another. And that this would be our ministry to the world. And in Matthew chapter 18, he actually tells us how to do this. In Matthew chapter 18, starting in verse 15, he says this to us. Sorry, Matthew 5, starting in verse 15. Hold on just one second. Yes, Matthew 15. Sorry, Matthew 18, starting in verse 15. We're going to get there, I promise you. Matthew 18, starting in verse 15, and it says this. If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. Truly, I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I truly tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything they ask for, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am with them. See, this is actually the process that Jesus gives us to reconcile one another. God has done the action of reconciling for us. Now, we are called into two ministries of reconciliation, helping others reconcile with God, which we've already talked about, but then helping other people reconcile together in relationship where there's a break, where things get messy. And the first step that he gives us is he says this, go alone. You go and talk to the person. And the intention is to win them over. So when someone has hurt you, when someone has betrayed you, when someone has done something to wrong you, your first step is to go and to win them back over, to have the conversation. And notice that the purpose of that conversation is not to make them feel guilty. It is not to punish them. It is not to make them wrong. It is to win them over. See, because here's the thing, is that whenever Jesus calls us into a conversation, the motivation will always be one of love. It will never be one of shame or punishment, which is oftentimes where we want to go, let's be honest, right? When we have the sit-down conflict conversation, it is oftentimes one of shame or punishment. And what Jesus is saying is, look, now the only intention that you should have in reconciling with one another is love in the middle of this. See, what I love about Jesus is you never actually have to guess his motivation. Have you ever been in a conversation where you have to guess someone's motivation? It's frustrating. But what I love is that Jesus is like, no. Here's your motivation. Just go in and love so that you could win the person back. Now notice, the crazy thing about this is that the responsibility for reconciliation is on the offended party. It's not on them who offended you. It is on you to go and reconcile back to them. See, how many times has someone hurt us, betrayed us, done something to wrong us, and then we just sit there and wait for them to apologize? We wait for them to take the action. See, here's the chain of events. Your brother or sister sins against you. See, they take something from you. They have now created a deficit in the relationship. They have taken something from you. I love the quote from The Kite Runner, one of my favorite books, and it talks about how the father of the young boy who's in the story talks about how all sin is essentially theft. That when someone lies to you, they are stealing from you the truth. That when someone gossips about you, they are stealing from you your reputation. That when someone literally takes something from you, they are taking from you. And so everything comes back to the space of theft. And so when someone wrongs you, hurts you, betrays you, you are now at a deficit in the relationship because of this. And here's the thing. Now you hold the title to that debt relationally. You hold the title. You now have the right to collect upon that debt that has been given to you. And here's the thing. The longer that you hold on to that debt, the more bitterness will enter into your life. The more you hold on to that deed for what they owe you, it is like a spiritual open door into your heart to allow bitterness to enter in. And let me tell you, that bitterness will choke out the life in you. The scriptures say that just a little root of bitterness comes in and troubles much. And it goes out and it starts to affect everyone else around you. See, this is the lie about holding on to a debt that someone owes us relationally and not being willing to reconcile, is we think, oh, it's just between me and them. It never stays just between you and them. It starts to leak out into every single other relationship that you have. Because again, now you're at a deficit. And so now if it was just between you and your mom or you and your dad or you and your spouse, now when you relate to your kids, you have to take from them because mom didn't give you enough. Or at work, when your boss is driving you hard and you're unwilling to forgive, now you come home and you take it out on your spouse. Because I have to take somehow in the middle of all of this, making up for it. See, when your brother is in debt, everyone is in breakdown, not just you. It affects every single one of you. And the gift that we have in the middle of this reconciliation is forgiveness. To forgive them the debt. To forego your right to collect on the debt. See, here's the thing. We oftentimes equate forgiveness with just letting someone off the hook. Which is, hey, I'm excusing this, I'm letting it go. See, excusing and forgiveness are two very different things. See, when you actually forgive, what you were saying is, I refuse to let this door into my soul stay open, to allow bitterness and brokenness and darkness flood into my life. I refuse to have a break in my character. And so I release you from the debt that you owe me, not for you, but so that I can be made whole. So that I no longer am carrying around the burden of this. Because until you reconcile, until you were willing to release that person from the break in the relationship, you will stay stuck. And there will be a conduit that is broken, not just between you and them, but between you and God. That you will be completely unable to experience love and grace and beauty until that is released. See, oftentimes when people come to me and they're saying, I'm just not feeling God. I don't know what's going on. I'm not feeling it. I'm trying to connect with him. I'm trying to hear his voice. I'm trying to move there. And there are often two questions that I ask. One is, do you have any sin that you need to confess? Is there anything hidden in your own life that you need to confess? But the second thing, and it's almost always the case, is who haven't you forgiven? Who are you holding on to resentment with? Because it is literally choking out the conduit between you and God and you and everyone else. And it will hold you back from the middle of this. See, if the intention is actually to win them back, then you both win. Somehow we make relationships very quickly into competition. Have you noticed this? We play power games with one another, and we struggle with all of that. And it's so fascinating that we struggle with this word grace that comes with forgiveness. See, mercy is not getting what you deserve. If you deserve punishment, you have mercy. Hey, I give you this. Grace is actually giving someone what they don't deserve. So I'm going to give you above and beyond what you even deserved in the middle of this. And God understood that we would wrestle with our own need for grace, that we would wrestle with our own spiritual need for grace between us and him, which is one of the reasons why I think that Jesus said that he is full of grace and truth. See, some Christians miss the grace part. They're just like, truth, right? And what Jesus says is like, no, it's actually both. You actually have to have grace and truth together to move forward. See, we wrestle with our own need for spiritual reconciliation, so it would make sense that we struggle with our willingness to reconcile with relationships all around us. Of course we would struggle with that. Of course it would be something that we wrestle through because it's the same thing that we wrestle through with God. This is the beauty of the cross, by the way, is that Jesus came and he fully loved those who society and religion and politics said he should never love, that he should have never been with, that he should have never connected to, and he was actually put to death by the religiously arrogant. And in the middle of all of this, in the middle of being crucified, his final words were, forgive them, release them from this debt. Because even he knew that it was not spiritually healthy to hold on to the debt as he left this earth. He literally said, I release all of you, not only from what you have done to me, but from what you will do to others around you. I release you in the middle of this. And then he came back to life from the middle of that so that not only we could be reconciled, but that we could then reconcile other people around us. Now, what on earth does this have to do with the present? Why is we having this conversation, especially after talking about the past last week? Because here's the thing about the present. It is that only through Jesus can we be reconciled. And it is only through his presence that we can then reconcile other people and reconcile with other people. Let me tell you, you will need the presence of God if you are planning to release other people from the debt that they owe you. That is something spiritually supernatural that is beyond your ability to do. Because until then, you will keep taking it back and taking it back and taking it back and taking it back. And the presence will be a continual reminder to release and to forgive and to let go. See, otherwise, we get stuck in this spiritual power play. Have you ever just held on to bitterness because it makes you feel powerful? Let's just be honest, right? You're just like, I'm not going to forgive them. I mean, like, how many of you done this with your spouse? Not that I've ever done this, but how many of you ever done this with your spouse? You're like, I'm going to forgive, but I'm just going to wait a few hours, right? You're like, just to let them sit in it for a minute, right? Now, I would never do that, but I theoretically, right, if someone was to do that. Because there's this power struggle that we get in. And it's only when the presence of God comes and says, hey, you need to be released from this, that something beautifully happens in the middle of this. See, how we can reconcile so that love becomes the guiding force is the greatest question that we can ask. How do we start entering into reconciliation, not so that there's a power play, but so that we can release love every single place that we go? That should be our question in our relationships. How can I advance love today? How can I actually move this forward? What am I holding on to today that is keeping love from flowing through me? See, until we recognize the debt that we have been forgiven so that love could thrive, it will become a problem for us to recognize how easy it is to actually release others from theirs. Because when we recognize the price that was paid for our brokenness, everything else pales in comparison to that. And forgiveness becomes almost like the other knee-jerk reaction. It's why I believe forgiveness and gratitude are so intimately connected with one another. It's why the word give is in the word forgive, because it is a generous action, and generosity comes when we recognize our need to be forgiven. See, it's so beautiful that this passage in Matthew actually continues on to show us how we then forgive others around us. As Jesus is informing us that we are given this ministry of reconciliation, he says, now you can go forgive others and release them from the debts that they've owed you, that they owe you because you have been forgiven. There's this new thing in our society that I hate. And it's this new thing that's popped up in the last few months, I would say. And it's called canceled culture. Have you heard this? It drives me up the wall. And if you haven't heard about this, it's like the cool thing that the kids are doing these days. And basically, if you don't like someone, if someone has hurt you, if someone has offended you, you just say, they're canceled. They're canceled. And at first I thought, that can't actually be a thing. That's crazy. And then I started like seeing it everywhere. Oh, they're canceled. They offended me, they're canceled. They hurt me, they're canceled. They're weird, they're canceled. And see, this is actually what happens when humanity is disconnected from the presence of God, is that we actually start creating canceled culture, where rather than entering into this process of connecting to the presence of God and releasing others from the debt that they owe us, we start canceling relationships. And let me tell you, once you start down that road, you will eventually be left alone. Because there is not another human being on this planet that will not hurt you at some point, that doesn't deserve to be canceled in some way, shape, or form. And this is why, by the way, we at humanity have this 48-hour rule that some people love and some people hate. And we say, look, if you come to us or you come to someone with an offense and you have not dealt with it, we're going to give you 48 hours to go to that person and to address it with them. Not like because we're being mean or cruel, because it's literally saying you only get to have that poisonous door open in your life for 48 hours. I refuse to let you keep that door open because you're better than that and you need to be healthier than that. And we give people like, hey, 48 hours, then I'm going to that person and saying, hey, you need to talk to so-and-so because they are bitter, all right? And people get frustrated like, that's my business. No, it's not your business, because it actually starts affecting everyone else around you. And it becomes our business. And we wonder why communities start to break apart, families start to break apart, is because we've introduced canceled culture and that we're unwilling to actually have the conversation with one another to do the very thing that we were called to do, which is reconcile. Yeah. You can clap for that. And I'm almost out of time, but I'm going to give you these last two things. He then says, take two or three together. Look, if the first time didn't work, that is not your opportunity to go, see ya, right? Which is oftentimes what we do. How many times have we tried to reconcile and we're like, it didn't work? Guess that's it, right? I love that Jesus is like, nope, keep going. Now take a couple people with you. So now that you were not completely capable to do this, take a community with you, which it shouldn't be a surprise that Jesus says involve others, right? And take a community with you to go release them, because there's this power of community that comes when we are coming together and love is released in the middle of that. And there's this restoration of communal relationships that take place in the middle of that. And then the very last step, after you've had the conversation with them, after you've brought another person to them, and then it says take them to the church after that and have a larger conversation with that, after you've done three steps, not canceled culture, three steps, right, to get there. Then he finally says, release them. And even when he says release them, it is not the purpose of canceling them. It is for the purpose of restoration. He actually says, release them to their own space and pray that they hit rock bottom so that they can come back, so that they can be reconciled back into there. But here's the thing. How often do we just go there first? How often do we just immediately say, yeah, well, we're done. Have fun. Enjoy your life. And notice that Jesus actually puts all these steps into play, not because we necessarily needed them. Maybe we did need them. But because he's saying, look, this is actually the attitude of heart that I need you to have when you're connected to the presence of God and start reconciling the world around you. Is this level of grace is what's needed? And then I love that he ends this conversation around releasing people and reconciling people, that he ends this conversation with a conversation about binding and loosing things in heaven and on earth. That's a phrase, another phrase that Christians love, right? When we talk about the presence. I bind Satan, I lose freedom, right? All those things. We start using that language. I bind the devil, I release the spirit. All these things, we start just using that language. But guess what? All of that language is in the context of forgiving others. And all of this that he talks about, what we bind on heaven, what we release on earth, is actually in the context of our willingness to reconcile with others around us and reconciling with God. See, how you are with the Spirit determines how you are with others. And how you are with others will determine the power that you live in. It will determine the power that you have. See, because I am actually convinced, and medical science and neuroscience is actually keep catching up with what the scriptures has said, is this, is that the more you hold on to forgiveness, the more you will bind sickness and brokenness to your life. That our physical bodies actually start reacting to us withholding forgiveness, that we actually start binding bitterness in our life. That we actually start binding anxiety, that we actually start binding depression, that we actually start binding suicide. Now, I'm not saying all of that is connected to bitterness, but actually neuroscience is catching up and saying that most mental breakdowns that take place at an older level are oftentimes connected to bitterness that was never released younger years in life. Because what we bind on earth, we bind, and what we loose. See, this is what I love about Jesus, is that it's not some weird, spooky spiritual presence experience. It's not screaming out what we're binding and loosing. He's saying, look, if you will release people from their offense towards you and forgive, you will release heaven on earth. And if you choose to bind those things, then you will be bound here on earth. And this is why he calls us to live in the presence, that we were designed to be reconciled to God. And then to reconcile to others. And that is why his presence is so critical. You cannot and will not be able to do that on your own. But with the presence of God, you become a force of reconciliation everywhere you go. Let's pray together. Jesus, thank you so much for your presence. We thank you for the fact that you have come and that you release us from our past, God. You release us from how we have related to our brokenness and our hopelessness, God. But then in that gratitude, you come and you give us the energy and the wherewithal and the strength to then forgive others and to redeem and reconcile others, God. God, I ask today that as we examine our relationships, as we examine those who are closest to us, God, that as you even now start putting people in our minds of people who we need to forgive, God, people who we need to release. God, some people in this room for years struggles with their parents, with their siblings, with people who have abused them or hurt them, Father, that your presence even right now would come over them and there would be a supernatural release of reconciliation. Not just between you, but between other people, God. And we thank you that as we start to forgive, that you would loose things in our lives that need to be loosed, and that you would bind things that need to be bound, God. And we are grateful that it is by your presence that we become ministers of reconciliation in the world around us. We are so grateful. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the Humanity Church podcast. We hope that this was a meaningful experience, and we look forward to connecting again next week for another conversation around what it looks like to live by faith, to be known by love, and to be a voice of hope. Again, for more information about Humanity Church, you can visit us online at humanitychurch.com. And if you want to support the ongoing work here at Humanity Church, including this podcast, you can give online in about 10 seconds by texting the word Humanity Church, one word, to 77977. Thanks, and have an amazing week.